They say sometimes in life when one door closes, another one opens. In the case of Dalvac Quince, both happened on the same day.
I was killing it. I was at the gym of Buckhead, killing it. People coming in left and right, other trainers were getting jealous. I'm doing 10 people interviews in one day, signing up people left and right. The owner of the gym fired me. Fired me. You trying to take over the gym? What are you da da da? You know, other trainers were talking. Any type of success breeds envy. I had nowhere to go. I was distraught. I'm at Starbucks or something. I bump into a guy, Steve, who had his own place. He was like, damn, cuz you're down. You know what I mean? Like, I never see you down. I just got fired from the place for producing. It made no sense to my mind. But again, it's a blessing in disguise. You know what I mean? Sometimes you think something goes bad, it's exactly what you needed to push you along. So he said, yeah, I may have a situation for you. Call this guy, da da da. This guy was a developer. He was a real estate developer. He opened up this high rise. I'm having trouble closing these places. I want people to walk in and see, oh, people are living here. Oh, there's good energy. I need you to help me get again energy. Well, okay, what do you want to do? He said, well, I need a place to train my people. Train your people here. Well, how much do you want me to pay you a month? Like, I was prepared. He's like, nah, nothing, no fee. Just give me the visibility that we're crazy busy. So I told the trainers I hired, I got a new place. That happened the same exact day I got fired. The same exact day.
Also on this week's episode, we discuss the power of mind over matter, the importance of starting from the bottom, and how to be humble but stay hungry. And now, episode 6 of Culturation.
Good evening, my fellow citizens.
Are you ready?
The main event of the evening.
The ideas.
It's the word that you put in.
The ability.
Can you dig it?
The talent.
I'm going to show you
how great I am.
Those who influence, the entertainer, the business leader, and the entrepreneur, they're all right here on Culturation. And now, your host, Justin Epstein.
Welcome to Culturation. I'm your host, Justin Epstein. On this week's episode, we have the body sculptor, Dalvac Quince. Dalvac is a celebrity trainer, best known for his involvement with NBC's The Biggest Loser, and author of the 3-1-2-1 Diet. A true creative mind and visionary, Dalvac grew up playing sports, studying martial arts, and excelling in his studies. He later moved to Atlanta and found himself working odd jobs in retail and construction until he landed a job at a local YMCA as a front desk receptionist. His ability to connect with people provided him the opportunity to become a trainer at that facility after receiving his physical education certification. Fueled by his love for helping people, he grew his clientele in Atlanta and opened up his own gym, Body Sculptor Studio, located in the heart of the city. He trained some of the most influential people, including radio personalities, actors, musicians, and even went on tour to train Justin Bieber while he was on the road. His growth and popularity provided him the opportunity to audition for NBC's The Biggest Loser as a new trainer on the hit TV show, where he shared his passion and love for helping people overcome their struggles, both physically and mentally. He has always inspired people from a young age, and was now given the platform to do so on a national level. Dalvac continues to share his knowledge and positivity through speaking engagements across the country. With that being said,
I would like to welcome the body sculptor, the man, the myth, the legend, the fitness guru, and overall amazing person. Is that a good intro? Mr. Dalvac Quince, ladies and gentlemen, to Culturation. How you doing, D?
Good to be here, brother. Thanks for having me. Finally, right?
Exactly, man. So just so you know, me and Dalvac have been friends for many years, Even I can't get him to come the first couple times because of how busy this guy is. So to have him here today, we're honored.
Thank you.
I'm thankful, but look forward to really sharing his story. So I know a lot of you know who Dalvac Quince is, but what I want to kind of allude to today, talk through, is his journey, get to real the real him, not just what you see on TV and some of the other elements, but understand who he is as a person. And why he has been successful through both trials and tribulations, but also his successes and who he is today. So for those that may not be familiar with you, give them a little bit of a background on who you are and what you've done.
My name obviously is Dalvac Quince, Dalvac Lamont Quince. I was born in Stamford, Connecticut. My folks moved from Stanford to, when I say my folks, my mother moved from Stanford to Bridgeport. I am the middle of four. Is that even possible? Can you be the middle of four?
Well, it depends.
It depends.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm the third born. I have a younger brother. There's me, an older sister, and an older brother.
I'll be honest with you. I got like a 900 on my SAT. So I'm the wrong person to ask, man. Wrong person.
Moving on is the four of us. I was adopted at age four. My mom was super young when she had my brother. She was very interested in, you know, figuring out life with my dad, not necessarily being the best or even being there for us. Social workers, police officers came in, took us, put us in separate environments. Thank God that my aunt, Aunt Joan, saw to it that we stayed together. So for 2.5 weeks, I was with my younger brother after the police and social workers came. And then 2.5 weeks, my older brother and older sister were at another home. She saw to it that we stayed together. So these foster parents, Mr. and Mrs. Alcock from Jamaica, they had in like 14 kids in their home, and they said, we'll take them in. Every week, these kids would leave. They would just leave. And so I remember crying, saying, my sister, we're going to leave again, because I have separation anxiety. I didn't see you for 2.5 weeks. We're definitely going to leave.
Yeah.
So we didn't leave. We stayed. And they adopted all four of us and took us in.
So how old were you at this point?
I was four.
Do you remember it?
Yeah. Like, it was yesterday, because it was such a traumatic experience for me in terms of I'm at home. You know, I got my blue teddy bear, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, not anymore. So it was too impactful at a young age that, and I don't remember a lot of things, but I definitely remember that.
Wow. And I'm sure that's kind of carried on throughout this journey of your life thus far. And we'll kind of get into that more, but kind of how that also has shaped you a little bit.
Absolutely.
Wow. So you get adopted.
Yep.
You move in with a family of 14.
Yeah. Kids.
Kids, until your aunt comes and brings you all together.
Mm-hmm. No. She brought us all together. That led us to the house of 14 kids.
Wow.
So we were reunited, and we got added into that home.
Got it.
So back in the day, it wasn't the other way around. We had already been separated from. So when the police officers and the social workers came to my mother's house, they said, okay, we don't have anywhere to put all four of you. We'll put two of you over here and the other two over there. Mom was like, are you crazy? These kids have to be together. So they found foster parents that already had a foster system, you know, kids coming in and out. But for whatever reason, they kept the four of us, and they kept us together.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So did you have a pretty good relationship with your brothers and sisters when you were growing up at this age? Because now you really have to stick together, right?
Yeah. I think it made us closer. It's funny. My adopted parents were, you know, they did their best, but they were strict to a fault. You know, spare the rod, you spoil the child. They're quick to, like, hit you, go outside, you get the tree trunk, you get the electrical cord, I'm gonna whoop you into some. So that bonded us in a way. It was like, you know,
we're going through this together.
We're going through this together, kind of thing, you know. And I remember for a long time, my parents would have let me out the house. Like, I would watch other kids play. Like, we stayed inside. Everyone else laying there playing their on their four wheelers and their 10 speeds, and they're outside running, you know, and they're playing G.I. Joe. I was like, watch. But they were super, super, super strict.
Wow. Do you think that made you rebel? Was that something that you feel like you also run business, like things in a very structured manner?
Yeah.
Because of the fact that indirectly that was kind of instilled in you at such a young age?
Well, rebel isn't the word that comes to mind for me when I think of my story. What comes to mind is determined. It made me really determined to create options, that I just wasn't inside all the time, but I was able to create outside as well. If I wanted to open that door and walk out, there was no one that told me I couldn't. You know what I mean? If I wanted to go outside and play in the big world, on the beach, around the world, whatever it was, there was no one that was going to say no anymore. It motivated me to relinquish all my no's and create yeses.
So you live with this family for how long? To what age?
I was 14.
Okay.
When I left out the house, just for a little while, and then came back, and then because my older brother and sisters were leaving, and sister left. So 14, came back at 16, then left again at 17.
So during this time, this is all in Connecticut?
This is in Florida.
Florida now.
This is in Florida.
So
left Connecticut,
yeah,
Bridgeport, and went to Florida.
Okay, what part of Florida?
Ocala.
Okay. So, listen.
Wait, can we talk about it?
I actually know where Ocala is.
How?
So I went to UCF.
Okay.
And at some point, if you go the wrong direction and you start driving through places that have Like, no knock against Ocala, but you leave a big...
Are you kidding me?
You listen.
It's
whack. You leave a big college university and you go through some small towns and it's like Ocala. There's certain things you remember. And I think at that time I had a publishing company and I think our printer was based in Ocala.
Hilarious.
That's the only
So you know Ocala.
I actually didn't know Ocala. This
a lot
is
of people
some,
don't know Ocala.
No, not some like bullshit where I'm just saying like, oh yeah, Ocala. I love Ocala. Like, I actually know Ocala because I had to drive down to the printer.
Word. You're going to get this.
So not only that, you're living in Ocala.
Right.
Okay. And you're going to school in Ocala at this time?
I'm at Lakewood High School.
Okay.
Living in Silver Spring Shores, which is a suburb of Ocala, similar to Brooklyn to Brookhaven to Atlanta.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Going to school, Lakewood High School, and loving it. I mean, before that, I was in Connecticut at Hallin and all these other places in Bridgeport. But then, Lakewood High School, that was it. That was the spot.
So high school, how were you as a kid? Were you into sports at this time? Were you into working out? Were you trying to figure it out?
I was into sports, but my parents weren't into me playing sports. Like I wanted to run track. And I remember my mother saying, you think say money go upon tree? Me just want to buy track shoes and buy this and the other. And I'm like, oh goodness. So they never really supported any of that.
Okay.
But I did take martial arts and they were supportive of that only because my Satoshi, the guy who taught the class, took a liking to me. So if I needed to buy a new gi, if I needed to buy whatever I needed to buy, he was like, I got you, kind of a thing, yeah. Right? But I ran track for a little while, played a little football, pick up football, basketball with my friends and stuff like that. But never for this game, never for a team.
So I never knew you did martial arts.
Studied for 12 years.
Come on.
12 years. So third degree black belt, my G.
Come on.
Let's go.
Are you serious?
You want to try some techniques right now? Yeah, yeah. I'm nice.
Listen,
yeah.
I'm wearing skinny jeans. I can't even extend my left leg. But I'll tell you, the crazy thing is, and I say this to so many people that keep on coming on the podcast, right? And people that either I've had some relationship with or some that I've had a real long relationship with.
You find out something new.
It's so exciting, man, because I'm literally here as a fan and as really somebody kind of learning as people are listening
That's
to this,
dope.
Which is dope for me and dope for everybody else. But I really never knew you into karate. So you're on some like Bruce Lee flow.
Taekwondo, some... A little bit of judo, but yeah.
If I would have known this, if I would have done proper research, but sure. I don't even think this is out in the media.
Sure.
I would have brought in a board. Like, I would have had you chop that thing in half. Like, we could have had some
Oh, that's easy.
Content.
I could do that easy.
Man.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right.
I'd have that inner peace. That's where that comes from.
So while you're in school, was school something you were fond of as a kid? Were you into education? Were you kind of really more dreaming at this point and really not focused? Like, what was your mindset during this time? Because there's not a lot going on in Ocala.
Right. There's not a lot going on, which kind of forced me to be into school. Like, to me, school was an escape.
Okay.
From home. It enabled me to just focus on. And I, at an early age, needed, for whatever reason, to be smarter. Looking up to, back then, Martin Luther King, Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, leaders in my community, like I want to be like them. I want to be like him. I want to be, you know, people that I aspired to be. So I was a nerd in a sense, you know what I mean? I love to study. I got great grades. But I was also the class clown. I was also the guy. I always had the jokes, kept everybody in good energy. So, and anytime there was a pep rally or anything, I put together the performance. Anybody that goes to went to Lakewood High School knows this about me in terms of, putting on performances in school and stuff. That was my thing. Like, I remember doing Rob Bass, Eazy-E, and you know what I mean?
Okay.
And I want to rock right now. Did a whole set, and I won. It was like a competition in the middle of the gymnasium, and I killed it.
So hip-hop's always, music has always been part.
I mean, let's go back to Kwame. Let's go back to Tribe Called Quest. I had everything. I had a Gumby.
Wow.
I had Jerry Curl. I had a Shaq. I had it all.
You had a Jerry Curl.
Word is bond. I had a Jerry Curl.
Can we get some footage of that?
Please don't.
Please let me see that. Please let me see that.
Walk around looking like ready for the world.
Oh, man. Amazing. Amazing. So you were active. You were out there.
Right.
You know, so you had a pretty normal childhood in that regard as far as the school aspect until it sounds like you went to the home to where you had all this creative energy and juices and dreams and vision, and then you go home and you kind of can't step outside.
Right.
So being stuck inside or having a very strict household growing up, do you feel like that also is to your advantage when you look back at it? Like during the time saying, I don't know if this is, I was pissed, my parents are strict, I can't go out, but that was where you were cultivating some of these visions and kind of visualizing what was going to happen?
It's a good question. Our parents teach us two options, what to be or what not to be.
Right? Wow. All right.
They say to us through love and affection and admiration and drive, be this way. Or you're treated a certain way so badly, you'll say, I never want to be that mean or that angry or that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and for me, considering that I came into an abusive home, physically and mostly mentally, I think it taught me how to have a voice despite what you're told, right? It's like everybody needs a push.
Yeah.
You know, some people view a push as pushing them down and they are suppressed, or a push to go, watch this. My childhood taught me a push to go. It taught me that, yeah, I know you're saying that I'm not good enough. I'm not going to fall for that because I think I am. And I'm going to prove to you, but most importantly, myself, that I am.
What gave you that confidence, though? What gave you that mindset? Because there's a lot of people that grow up in homes with abuse or parents bringing them down or just their surroundings bringing them down, and they go the opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that mindset. What do you think? Was that something naturally instilled in you? Was that something that you had to learn? What made you shift your mindset in that regard? Because you always hear people make excuses. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, because in certain cases, until you're in that place, you can't really understand where a person's coming from.
Mm.
And they let it define them, and it holds them back. But in your case, you used it as fuel. In fact, it's like it almost didn't affect you. You used it as, I'm already good.
Mm-hmm.
You had blinders on.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case most of the time.
The Bible has a scripture, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. Isaiah 54:17. It's one of my first tattoos I put on my arm. I named my son Isaiah because of that scripture, because of my childhood.
Wow.
When my parents were yelling, God was whispering, it's going to be okay. I got you.
So faith.
Faith.
Faith is what got you through.
Faith is the evidence of things not seen. And it's that faith that makes me stronger even to this day. Even in the middle of despair, like I don't know what's going to go on, that lasts as a teardrop, boop, in a big-ass ocean of possibility. You feel me? Like my life, I'm supposed to go the other way. I'm supposed to. I was reunited with my cousins, and they were in a certain level of poverty that I didn't even experience. I'm like, dang, they had it even worse than me. But my experience was an emotional thing. You know what I mean? As well as a mental thing, like you're not good enough. You're never be, like that's what was instilled. And so for me, instead of believing it, I hugged my suppressor. I'll never forget, I went up to my dad sometimes, and we were taught to be afraid of my mother and father. Like what they said went. We didn't argue, it's just their rules. And I remember going up to him because he would make us go and cut our hair, and we'd go to, and I didn't like it, and I started teaching myself how to do it. I remember going up to him one day scared. I must have been like 10, 11 years old. I was, Daddy, is it okay if I cut my own hair and I can try and try out on Andrew and Joey and, you know, so I can get really good at it? Why are you bothering me? Leave me alone, was his reaction.
Wow.
I was scared, right? Like terrified as a kid. Like this guy's huge and he's all this man. And so I said, because I want to try it and I believe that I can be good at it. He said, go ahead, do it. I don't care. And I remember hugging him. It was my first time I'd ever hugged him. He was shocked. So I knew in that moment.
You had almost over him in that moment.
Yeah. I was empowered. I was like, if I could hug the pain away, if I could love the pain away, more importantly, if I could step up to my fear, not run from it, not hide in a corner and hope that it goes away. But yeah, you know what? You're so revered, you're so powerful, your ways go, this is your home. You reminded me so many times how I'll never be, but I'm gonna walk up to you anyway with love and say, look, is there a way to figure this out? I love you anyway. That's how I approach it. That's how I approach everything from this day. It taught me that.
So for you, literally, the motto is love. Love, love rules all.
It always does. It always does. Because at the end of the day, no matter how much pain we live in this world, no matter how many bad things happen, people don't want to stay there. They don't want to stay in that darkness. They need light, right? Like, no, I don't care how dark a room is. You put a candle in a room, it changes the whole room.
100%.
You feel me? Just a little bit of light can change anyone's world. It changed mine.
Wow, that's crazy, man. Now, did you, your brothers and sisters, when you're going through this, as they're going through this, are they looking to you as you're, it sounds like you're the first one that kind of stepped up mm-hmm. and challenged it. Did they then all of a sudden give them the confidence to say, well, maybe we now can start to look at this differently?
Nah.
Or were they still like, like, oh
this
no.
dude crazy.
Yeah,
right. Like, are you serious? You stepped to pops like that? Yeah. And I think to your point, if they did, they may be in a better position in life today, to be honest with you.
No, and I'll tell you, and that's why I say I think life is made up of so many little moments that can change and define us. And things such as that, which seems small at the time, is literally a life-altering situation when you look at it.
Right.
And it dictates who you are moving forward and what you're capable of. So it's interesting you say that. If they would have done something differently, would have changed kind of the landscape or the blueprint of their life, because if you start that young, you don't know any different. And when you attack fear that young and it's met with you overcoming it, then what do you have to be scared of at that point?
What makes us? Like clouds and flossing, and that doesn't make us. It's agitation that makes us. Like if we know, because granted, agitation will come, right? Diversity is going to come no matter what. You know, look how far you've come from the day we met to where you are now. But look at all the little things that you had to sacrifice, that you had to bear, that you had to swallow pride in. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That you had to get a little bit to create a lot. You follow what I'm saying? But you know how to deal with that stuff.
But you know what? And that brings me up to, there's always a moment when I speak to people when comments such as this or within the same vein are made about little things, right? And the little things and the little things. That was my whole reason. One of the main reasons I started this podcast is I wanted to not give people false understanding of how to become successful or what creates success.
Fact.
Especially in the age of social media. I'm a millennial, I guess, if you want to say. I'm 34, right?
Okay.
But I feel like an old soul. And the problem is for these younger kids
You've
coming up.
You've always been an old soul.
Yeah, weird, right? But the thing that bugs me is you meet a lot of young kids that are very smart, but they see shit on social media that depicts people living certain lifestyles, like life is always flawless. And we sure. know that's not the truth. There's no such thing as an overnight success. And I think that is the biggest misrepresentation for a lot of, not even just young people, people that are older trying to make it or to start a business. They don't realize what goes on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason I wanted to interview people like yourself, innovators, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, and just everyday people,
mm-hmm.
because there's more to it than what you see.
You know what my biggest gripe is with social media and all these other things, internet, etc. I love it, but then I hate it. I love it because of the access, but the problem with access, when you have so much to strive for, you don't know how to create your own.
Yeah.
Because you're always watching.
And trying to replicate.
And replicate as opposed to, but granted, I grew up on TV. I'm the kid in front of the TV. Like, I love TV, but the TV had to come off at a certain time. There were limitations created, which forced me to go read, which forced me to use my imagination, which forced me to draw, to paint, to write, to be active and creative as opposed to swiping and looking at what everyone else is doing. I have this conversation with my son all the time. Put your phone down for a minute. Could you actually turn off your Instagram? And he does it. He's like, he just came back on.
I can vouch for this because young Prince Isaiah
mm-hmm.
has not been on in a minute, and he was all over it at
he
one point.
He was all over, and he purposely shut it off. Like, Pops, I don't need that. Like, it's sometimes it's a distraction. And I love that he's there, and the kid's only 20.
Yeah.
I love that he's there, and I wish more young people, and I'm sure there's other young people out there. I'm not anti-Instagram. I go into meetings all the time. What's your platform? It matters so much.
You have to evolve with the times.
You have to evolve, and it is what it is. I'm not knocking it by any means.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is don't let it be. There's too many options of watching and not enough quiet time of doing. You feel me?
Yeah.
I'll turn on Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, television, magazines, movies. That's six different things I'm watching what someone else is doing. Where's the three things? Give me half of six. What are the three things that you're doing for you?
Yeah.
Shut it down. Shut it off. But give me a reason to watch you instead of you being the watcher. You know what I'm saying?
Have people watch you versus 100%. Watch them.
100%. Invest in you, in time in you. Fact.
So you now are 16, 17, come back to home a couple different times,
yep,
right?
Yep.
What's kind of the next thing? Are you staying in Ocala? What are you going to college? Are you looking for a job? What are you kind of now saying? Because you've had some success in school, and you're popular, and you're doing music and track and field, but it sounds like you have a lot going on. Where are you going to put that energy?
My energy is pretty much just going to go in figuring me out. You know, I did some stuff in school, obviously. I was in school for a little short time. My father had prostate cancer, so I actually went back home for a short stint just to help out the family. My mom wasn't strong enough to take care of him, et cetera, et cetera. I came out of that scenario because, again, the personalities kept bop, bop, bop.
What made you go back?
I had to keep feeding the love, dog. I had to. It wasn't just for him. It was for me, too. You feel me?
So that's super interesting.
It's reciprocal.
So that's interesting. Yeah. So sometimes it's also to feed your soul for you to get through it on your end.
Are you kidding me? Every day is therapy. Every single day. What I do, what I've done in my career has as much to do with the people I help as much as helping myself. You feel me? That's why it's interpreted to be so good. Like, I remember when I first did the show, and I had an interview with similar to this, but you're much better. I appreciate this in a sense that I remember the lady asking me, "So, were you overweight? What makes you think you could relate?" I said, "No, I wasn't. I was never overweight. I just understand pain, and I understand the tools to get out of it. And by the way, you're never away from fear. You're never away from doubt. You're never away from pain. I respect it, and because I respect it, I put it in a place and I learn from it and I move on. I know the tools to make you love yourself even when the world is saying you should doubt yourself." And so, you know what I mean? That's exercise to me, internal exercise. Why you work out so much? Oh my God, you look so good. Because I put in those reps, but I also put the reps in my soul as well. And I give people those tools daily.
So where do you think you got those tools from initially?
I think it has to go back to when the hate was there and you can't love yourself, the voice in my head saying, "Yes, no, it's not true. You're much more than that."
So you're doing mental workouts.
I'm doing mental workouts, my G. I'm doing spiritual workouts. Like the spiritual warfare was, believe it, you're no good. You know, wait a second, yes, you are. So, you know, what's that saying? There's two wolves, the one that's made from love and the one that's made from fear. Which wolf is going to be stronger, the one you feed the most? I kept feeding the love. And I literally had to walk up to my anger and walk up to my demon, so to speak, and be like, "Come here. I'm going to love you regardless." If I didn't hug him, if I didn't find my voice at a young age, I would be in an entirely different place in life. And I know that. I know that. It's not about muscles. It's not about commas.
Yeah.
You know, I was having a conversation with J.A. about how this person that we know is wealthy, but they're not really happy. Wealth doesn't bring you happiness. Happiness is a spiritual, internal thing. You know what I mean? Like, you got to love the inside out, not the outside in. You got to reverse that. And I love this because I developed it over the years. And all I want to do is show people around this world, this planet that we live on, these are the things you do to get back to loving you. And there's steps and reps.
So I saw something the other day. Right. I think it was a TED Talk I was watching. And what you just said actually is interesting. So one of the big things that they talked about is happiness. The whole thing was on happiness and how people define happiness. We all strive to be happy. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could remember this young girl's name that did the TED Talk because it was super fascinating. But she said happiness is not what we think it is. True happiness is having meaning. And once we find meaning in what we do and why we do it, then you experience true happiness. Mm. It seems like you found your meaning, which wasn't technically working out or fitness. Your true meaning was spreading love.
Fact.
And to me, I think that's why you have these tools and why you've had such an organic process is because money doesn't define you. it's your words mm-hmm. that define you and influence many others.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you seeing that. It's for me, it's about inspiring people who are taught to doubt themselves, who are surrounded by suppression, you know, whether it's whatever environment you're in, you know, home, work, school, I don't care who you are, work especially.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are in life. Like, you'll go into a room and you'll feel inadequate because everyone else is wealthier or someone else. No. You're defined. You're stop seeing with your eyes and have a conversation with them. Really see a person. You know what I mean? And what value you bring.
Yeah, not what they could do for you.
Not what they could do for you. And you know where I live in L.A., the majority of the atmosphere is like, what can you do for me? What position are you in? You know what I mean? There's a sort of a pause before there is a warmth. You feel me? And that's limited. I don't want to live my life like that. I want to be able to walk into a room and affect the room. You know? I want to be able to have a conversation that's so compelling that it makes me shift my day or maybe even my year. And it doesn't have to be, again, about wealth alone. So many people have two levels of conversation, and one of which is always money.
True.
You feel what I'm saying? Because that's how you're defined of whether or not I'm going to spend my time with you. When was the last time you had a spiritual conversation about, not even a spiritual, an emotional conversation, an internal conversation? You know what? Today's not such a good day because, you know, I was having a, wow, I didn't even know that about you. Well, we've never talked in that way.
Do you think that a lot of people have that mindset or don't have those deeper conversations with substance because society in a lot of ways teaches us that you're weak, that therapy is bad, that all these things are going to lessen you, when in fact they're going to empower you based on what you're saying?
It goes back to what we talked about, all those different agitations that you have to go through in life. You know, if everything is easy, then you're not going to be molded and made into a better person. And talking about what's going on inside is a very difficult thing. Talking about your past and some of the things that you're not as proud of, you don't want to have that conversation with someone. And if you do, you want to make sure you're telling someone who actually gives a shit.
True.
You feel
what I'm
saying?
Because you don't want to open up and then all of a sudden.
Of course not.
It's not received well.
What a beautiful expression. Open up.
Yeah.
A lot of people aren't open. They stay closed. I know people that are married and the wife has never opened up to the husband or the husband to the wife. And that's supposed to be your life choice, the person you choose. So you walk this planet closed. Have you ever seen a flower blossom when it's closed? It doesn't. It doesn't reach its full potential. And the only way that we're going to open up is to just be open, understand that vulnerability has more strength than weakness. I do what I do because I choose moments to be vulnerable, because on the other side of that, I'm stronger for someone else who needs me. Right? If I stayed closed, I couldn't do the work I do.
You'd be a hypocrite.
Not only would I be a hypocrite, I'd be a hypocrite because it wouldn't come through from an authentic place. Yeah. I actually wouldn't give the best advice. I wouldn't even empathize. I couldn't.
And you get more out of people, though, because they tell that it's authentic, that it's pure, that it's genuine.
I have this God-given ability to help people open up and express themselves when normally I always hear this, wow, I've never told anyone that before. Mm. Only because I allow myself to be open as I'm talking to them. If I speak to them like this, if I'm like this, I'm like this. Before you tell me a thing about what you're going through, I just want you to know, I've been through this, this, and this. I'm not proud of it, but I respect it. I'm only here, and here now because of those things. So now that I've told you my open, what's yours?
So let me ask you, this is super interesting to me.
Guys, I appreciate you guys chatting with us for a second. He's talking to me. You know what? I said that I wouldn't let this live, but it's living. Do you mind if we keep going or you want
to
stop?
You know what? Up to you, man.
Go. Let's go then.
So, since everybody's tuned in live right now, the one thing Dolvet and I were talking about before we started is I always name episodes based off of a person's experience, right? If they're in different industries and kind of what I'm going to call them and what the title of the episode is, sure, and all that. For many years, you've been known as the Body Sculptor. I actually have a completely different name for you now.
Okay.
You're truly a soul sculptor.
Mm.
You're not really sculpting people's bodies. You're sculpting people's minds and their hearts.
Mm.
For me, I've known you over 10 years. I always know you were very passionate. You could speak eloquently, that you had a lot of love. But this is the first time I've ever heard you speak in such extent about what people mean to you, mm, and what lengths you want to go for people.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, you could have the best physique in the world, but if your mind and heart ain't right, it's not going to help at the end of the day.
It never does. It's a, thank you, by the way, but it's a selfish thing. My industry is very selfish. Physical fitness, personal trainers, don't train with him, train with me. I'm the best that ever did it. I never approach my job like that. You know, it's never about I'm the only guy on an island. It was always, what can we do to make this client better?
So do you start with their mind first, or do you start with their physique and everything else first?
From the heart to the mind, then the body.
How many people in the industry do you think do that?
Tell your mind to get out of your body's way.
Listen, I'm going to have a lot of quotes and memes after this.
That's like a fact. Talk. That's a fact. Tell your mind to get out of your body. I have to start there, because it's the mind is telling you to make that bad decision when you really know better. Yeah. I love talking to people, especially people that are thirsty for knowledge. Like, what should I do? Should I do this? And they name off 10 things that they know are good versus the 10 things bad. I say, why are you asking me when you already have the answers? Well, I'm just looking for someone to push me. But you already have the answers. Your mind's telling you to make those choices. And then the regret comes later. I don't change your body. I change your perception. I change your habits. And then the body is going to do it, because if you really love yourself, you'd never treat yourself to that extreme. But love starts here. Love starts here, goes there, lives there, sat, you know what I mean? And then those messages lead to the
trickle down.
100%.
All right. So you go back home.
Yep.
You know, you check on your stepfather at this time, or your foster parent.
Yep.
You know, where do you kind of start now evolving into your career path? Because you've come a long way, and I want to kind of jump into the evolution of that.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get into this world of fitness and health and wellness?
I moved to Atlanta because my older brother left, and he was in Connecticut with my uncle, Mango. Okay. And Mango bought clothes from New York and sold them in Connecticut, but he heard about the Atlanta market, you know, like Atlanta Mart and all these other places where he can also buy wholesale and then sell them in New York and sell them in Connecticut, you know, in the projects and stuff like that, Bridgeport, Connecticut, and other places. My brother came to Atlanta. He was like, yo, dude, the women outweigh the men 10 to 1 in this spot. My G, like,
I mean, it was true.
I mean, I was like, I'm coming. So I came and I crashed with Drew for a good while. And I just started working jobs and trying to figure out life. You know what I mean? I wasn't scared to work. And I think that came from my father, because he forced me to do work. Right?
So what were some of the first jobs when you came to Atlanta? Because I want people to understand, and not everything's glamorous and sexy.
Not everything is glamorous, yeah, and sexy.
You got to start somewhere.
You have to. I remember working at a place called 50 Off,
okay,
where their niche was everything is 50% off of the retail price. So if something was, you know, $18, you're going to get it for $9 because you're shopping at 50 Off. And they were based out of San Antonio, Texas. I was the receiving manager. But I started out just working and receiving the boxes in the back, the whole thing. But I worked so hard that they literally said, hey, you're really good. We want you to travel. So every time they opened up a 50 Off store, I was the receiving manager teaching that part of the department, you know, how to do the thing.
Okay.
I worked in retail because I loved fashion. I loved it. And I wanted to understand that. And in my head at the time, and it's a little bit even now, you know, I wanted to be James Bond. I wanted to be Black James Bond, James Blonde.
Look, there's talks.
You feel me?
I'm just saying.
There's an opening.
There is an opening, and they're talking about having a Black James Bond.
I'm just saying, Idris is up, but just in case, schedule-wise,
if there's a conflict, you're ready. On deck.
I'm ready.
Okay.
Okay? So I wanted to be him because, when I saw the movies, this guy knew fast cars. He knew art. He knew women. You know, one of my favorite movies is Thomas Crown Affair. You know what I mean?
Great, like, movie.
Great movie. The remake. So I wanted to be that guy, you know, business savvy and you know, elegant, and, you know, knew how to cook. My mom taught me how to cook. You know, I remember
Jamaican food,
American food, you name it. I learned it, right? The guy who taught me martial arts, he was also a culinary chef. So he taught me like cordon bleu and all this other stuff. So I cook. A lot of people don't know. I don't even brag about that. Like, it is what it is. I love to cook.
You already got looks, man. Now you're throwing cooking into it. Like, slow down.
And Pops threw down and taught me how to break down an engine and you know, keep up with the house. And so I had both of those things. But one thing I didn't have is swag, woman swag. So I wanted to be able to look at my girl or potential girl and be like, oh, you're a size 6. Oh, you're an 8. I got you. And just be able to shop for them. So I purposely got jobs in retail to increase my repertoire. Everything we do as a young person is about women, right? At least it was for me. Wasn't it for you?
Like, I'm a married man with all that. My wife was the first woman I ever met.
And I'm Puerto Rican. yeah, that's not true. I'm going to do another one of these hauls. But anyway, yeah, so I got a gig, Lenox Mall, and I'm working at like BCBG, Banana Republic.
I worked at Banana Republic.
Did you?
When I was in high school.
I loved it, dude. I loved it. So I was doing all these odd jobs, but then I left. I went fast forward, but let me back up a little bit. I actually left and worked in construction for a little while. I worked for OSHA, removing asbestos. So again, these are like different types of things, from retail to asbestos.
So retail, you went into because A, you liked people, you liked mm-hmm. talking, mm-hmm. you also liked women, mm-hmm. was trying to help, you know, guide them in their fashion sense, and mm-hmm. you liked fashion, right? So mm-hmm. obvious kind of transcending into that space. For this next gig though, how did you end up doing this first? And more importantly, what did you take away from this job?
The construction?
Correct.
Removing asbestos, I remember being at 50 Off Store, and one of my friends said, yo, listen, I'm gonna get after this job, Surge, if he's listening. I'm gonna go after this because it's paying at that time, I don't know, right at $20 an hour or whatever that was, which
strong,
is a huge step.
From retail to
back
that?
Then. Yeah. And I was like, what? I'm good with my hands and whatever. So again, I went into the job, got the job, but ended up being a lead on the job before I left. But removing asbestos, you know, is cancer causing material. You gotta wear a protective mask. Work with OSHA, work with the government, and I moved to Havity Grace, which is right outside Baltimore, Maryland, for a short time, just to do the job, do asbestos and remove the asbestos for a short time. And I loved it. You know, I think the takeaway from that was, you know, if you work hard enough, you can do, you know, you get what you want. So
in both jobs, though, you always ended up in a leadership role or a managerial role.
I never left any job I had the same way I came in.
Based off just straight work ethic?
Work ethic, connecting with people, you know. I mean, I've been the best looking guy in the room, but I'm a guy with the best attitude. You know what I mean? I approach it like, hey, there's nothing I won't do. I didn't feel like I was above anything. And I just bust my butt.
Okay, so now construction job ends.
Ends. I come back to Atlanta.
Okay.
Thought about getting back into retail, but didn't want to. I got a job at the YMCA.
All right.
Working at the front desk part-time because a friend of mine said, hey, they got an opening here. And again, I'm leaving school, so I'm jumping around different jobs in a short period of time, a couple years. And got a job at the YMCA. Someone walked up to me and said, hey, dude, like, not for nothing. You're good with people. You ever thought about being a trainer? You know, you got a good physique, the whole thing. I was like, I ain't really thought about it. So you should get certified. I got certified. Best thing that ever happened to me. I'm training elderly people. I'm training single moms or wives, or I'm training teenagers that have athletic potential. So I immediately, the entrepreneurial mind is working. Let me start coming up with different workouts for each one of these groups. And it was the best thing that could have happened to me.
And best thing. So would you say that was the greatest moment of kind of directing your life, or one of the greatest to kind of putting you on your path?
It's definitely on the list of one of the greatest things that kind of said, hey, stop jumping all around the place, focus. It gave me something that I loved, and it satisfied my people, my body, my mind. It gave me all those things in one sector.
Was it something that you knew right away?
Yeah, like day one.
It just hit you.
Day one.
Wow, all right.
Day one.
So and you're doing this?
I'm doing that. Doing it for a little while. But again, pay was okay. I was working corporately, which really doesn't sing to me. I wanted to tap into my entrepreneurial spirit. So I went and worked at a place just at the front desk. I started very humbly. That was more entrepreneurial driven. These personal trainers were paying to utilize the space, but then saying to their clients what they felt that they were worth, right? So if the place charged $600 a month, they could charge $150 a session with each client, or $45 based on that. Whatever they did, yeah. No one told them what their salary was going to be.
Like a barbershop.
Exactly. Yeah. That made me excited. You know, like a hair salon.
Yeah.
So you lease a space, whatever it is, like a barbershop. Yeah. So that was dope. I literally stayed at the front desk for a year and kind of watched everybody, but it was the best thing I could do because I immediately built a rapport. I was the first person people saw when they came in and the last person they left, and I got to know everyone's name on a first name basis until I decided one day I'm going to go on the floor, leave the front desk, and I'm going to start training myself.
So did you strategically choose to start at the front desk and let it go for that period of time versus jumping right in because you were methodically, strategically planning it all out?
Yeah.
Because the one thing I've spoken to Mitch and a bunch of other people that have been on the show about is they always started at the bottom where they were to learn and understand the craft. And Jay came on a week or two ago and he said, if you don't learn your craft, then you're nothing. Yep. He started bartending, this, that, you know, and how it goes. But most people start in that position because they don't have a choice.
Yep.
In your case, it sounds like you intentionally did it.
I did it for a couple of reasons. I didn't want to come there bogarting the space of the other trainers that are already there. I'm the new kid on the block. I'm just going to walk in and start demanding stuff. I did it because the owner didn't know me as well. I did it also because I just wanted to learn their system, how they work. I wanted to get to know the people on a personal level. What better position to be in than the first desk, the host?
It's an interesting way to look at it. Most people would look at it differently. Mm-mm. In your mind, you're looking at it as like, I'm going to set the tone.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give each person in here an opportunity to get to know me. Because again, I come from an impression. People see me, they have an impression of what I'm like without even knowing me. So my way of breaking the ice is break the ice. Give them an opportunity to get to know you. You'll get so much more out of it. Right? There's a quick story that's based on that. My very first season on Biggest Loser, I get a brand new manager. He was like, got some kid from Atlanta. He's on this show. It's about weight loss. Good looking guy. Wants to smile on time. Built whatever. Didn't really know what to do with me. He introduced me to a social media director. He has some ideas. Knew what to do with me. Younger, sharper, but not really. Had one of my close friends who ended up being an accountant, someone I bounced ideas off of all the time. I said to them, I'm doing a MOM. What the hell is a MOM? A meeting of the minds. I'm going to bring you guys back to Atlanta. I'm going to fly you into Atlanta. It's a two-day event. Rented out a back room in Davio's. Talked to him over there. I forget his name right now.
Yeah. Claude
yeah. over there. He had hooked you up in his back room. Went to Tiffany's and put a gift on each plate as my way of saying thank you to each one of these individuals who have influenced my life in some way. I looked up to each of you. I was inspired by each of you. I respected your minds, right? My takeaway in that was none of you guys know each other. I know all of you. Some of you guys know each other. I want you guys to get to know each other, but I want to not only say thank you for leading my life to this point, but if you were me and I were you, what would you do beyond this? Not only did I have the Atlanta squad, my squad that I love.
ATL,
you heard me? But the LA squad, I wanted and needed my manager to know how to best sell me. So I wanted him to see, this is me. This is where I come from. This is the influence. In so much, after that dinner, the next morning, we broke out the whiteboard at brunch at Four Seasons to say, listen guys, if you were me and I were you, in this multi-billion dollar business that is health and wellness, on this platform, what would you do? That's my YPO right there. That's my group right there. But the point is, had I not done that, my now manager would have never known what to do with me. He would have had an impression. So again, I had to break the ice and I humbly said, I'm flying you out here. Round trip. And I want you to see the people that inspire me in hopes that you can be inspired and see us and see our reaction. Come to my house, dude. Welcome. You know, that's important to me. especially when you do business. And that's my advice to a lot of people who are just out there trying to prove themselves. Stay humble, but stay hungry.
And what about surrounding yourself with the right people?
That's key.
Key, especially in LA.
Especially in LA. But this is what I say about LA. LA's dope for many reasons. It's creative. People are doing amazing things there. The weather's unbelievable. I believe this. You attract who you are no matter where you are. Put me in Wyoming. I'm going to attract some people that are either insecure or very positive, depending on where I am in life. So in LA, I attract me. And who's attracted to me and vice versa. The energy is reciprocal. I roll with people that are disruptive when it comes to doing business, which I love, that are thinkers, that are creative. You follow what I'm saying? There's smaller sectors of them there than there are in, here in Atlanta, but they're still there.
Yeah.
You know, and it took time. I've been there now almost 6 years.
It's
those
crazy.
First 2 years was like, I'm chilling, I'm working, I'm going home, working, I'm going home. Now I have an opportunity to socialize a little bit more.
Yeah.
But like you, your social is usually wrapped around business to some capacity. We're hustlers, right?
Most of the time.
Yeah.
So you work the front desk at this spot.
Let's talk about it.
You're building your repertoire. People are learning you. You're learning them. You're strategically planning. Do you then eventually move into training in that to that location? Or did you jump somewhere else?
I eventually started training.
Okay.
In that location, which was dope for me. I'm training. I'll never forget the first girl I trained. She was getting married, and I trained her. And I remember she gave me a gift card, and she was so happy. And I was like, damn, if I can affect someone's life like that, I'm doing the right thing. Like, she inspired me. There's a bigger story, and I won't do it here. But my career changed. Because I was following and looking up to this one trainer who dressed head to toe to the nines. He got there at 5 a.m. He left at 5 p.m. He worked out at 2 o'clock. Like, that was his thing, right? But he also dressed up and went to Blue Point and Chops. And he came in there to be seen. And people were like, oh, who's this guy? You know, it was like, he seems like a bodybuilder type. I mean, he was a bodybuilder type. But he was so dope. Just his swag. He was a quiet, confident. You know what I mean? And so I watched him and used him as a point of what I would use to mock and do my business, right? So I did my thing going to different places like him. You know, I would meet him at Blue Point and we'd hang out and people would, oh, what do you guys do? And I would give my card and I made my card special so that it stood out at the time because cars were huge back then.
Yeah.
You follow me? But I did that. I was averaging about one, maybe two new clients a week if I was lucky. I bumped into this dude, saw him at the gym. He's working out, he's doing his thing. I walked up and said, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. He busted out laughing. I was like, come train with me. But I'm one of 20 trainers that probably approached him already. He was like, nah, I'm good. Eventually, one day, he was like, all right, fine, I'll train with you today. When I tell you, like me and you, we clicked so quick. Didn't really have a good relationship with my dad. He really didn't have a good relationship with his dad. I'm a father. He was a father. We loved working out. We quick to laugh. And we clicked like this. It was a workout. Plus the workout was dope. But it was a friendship that was built in minutes. I'll never forget that day for the rest of my life. A couple weeks pass. They had the Atlanta guy with his shirt off on all the hits Q100. Jeff says to Bert, listen, not for nothing. Why don't you be the Atlanta guy with your shirt off? Well, let's call my trainer. By then I was. He called me up. How long is it going to take? He was like, don't cuss. You're on national radio. I said, okay. How long is it going to take to get me in shape? I said, you give me 90 days, 4 days of training, 3 days of homework, and I will change your body. I changed his body. I changed his confidence. He changed my life. I went from 2 potential clients a week to 60.
Wow.
6-0. So, and everything from that point on rose.
So another pivotal moment in your life.
Huge pivotal moment.
So people have moments like these in life, mm-hmm. not all the time, but when they do, are you ready? Are you prepared for that moment, right? Mm. Because a lot of people miss opportunities
yep.
that are presented to them because they're not ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like that opportunity, how it changed your life, you still talked, still friends with them to this day?
To this day.
You still recognize that situation. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like a lot of people catch amnesia when people help them get on? And never really acknowledge or give gratitude and appreciation.
Damn.
Because we see it happen. I mean, it's life. And it happens, and sometimes people, whether it's intentional or not, always say, I'm self-made. But none of us are truly self-made.
No one's self-made. There was someone who guided you or inspired you or showed you the ropes. To give someone credit is key. I think what happens with when you give credit and you humbly admit that it took a village to put you in the position that you're in, I think you open up more probability for a longer career. Because you're always looking at either being the chief of a new village is also going to help people, or humbly sitting in the middle of that village and soaking in and learning. Because every day shifts. It's not the same every single day. So if you have a person and or persons that have put you on, acknowledge them. Say thank you.
You'd be shocked how far thank yous go.
Thank yous go. Thank you and please, two of my favorite words. I love thank you and please. You know what I'm saying?
Very underutilized.
Come on.
Very underutilized.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Sometimes people just say in their mind, they don't look the person in their eye and say that. Thank you for having me here today, Justin.
Thank you for coming on.
It's been a minute since we said we were going to do this. You may have had your doubts. Like, is he even going to do this one day?
No, I'm going to look you in the eye and say I had my doubts.
I know you did. I know you did. But the authenticity of it was, for me, I knew I would be here. And more importantly than not, you called me on this months ago when you first got this start. I was one of your first phone calls.
And I'll say once again, no matter how busy you were, what you have going on, even though you run late sometimes mm-hmm. or maybe have to reschedule, mm-hmm. without hesitation, you said, I'm in.
What? Because I know you. I know you. And I know what you're doing. And I see it. And I feel it. And I'm like, this is dope. This is 100% him. And I wanted to support for that reason. You've supported me in my career. You're on the list of people that I talk about, that I'm proud of, that I'm inspired by. So to have you here doing this and doing your thing, shout out to Premier, shout out to, you know what I mean? Like, I love you, bro, and I'm proud of you.
Love you too,
so
man.
Thank you.
So now you get 60 clients. You go from 2 to 60.
Yeah, man.
You're killing it. You're building your reputation.
Let's go.
People are now in the city. Dolvec Quince became synonymous with fitness for Atlanta.
Yeah.
For a very long time.
Yeah.
What's kind of next in that journey? Now you're building up this base of clientele and people are really seeing great results.
I was killing it. I was at the gym of Buckhead, killing it. People coming in left and right. Other trainers were getting jealous. I'm doing 10 people interviews in one day, signing up people left and right. The owner of the gym fired me.
Really?
Fired me. You trying to take over the gym? What are you da da da? You know, other trainers are talking. You know, talking. Any type of success breeds envy. I had nowhere to go. I was distraught. I'm at Starbucks or something. I bump into a guy, Steve, who had his own place. He was like, "Damn, cuz you're down." You know what I mean? Like, I never see you down. I just got fired from the place
for producing.
For producing, which made no sense to my mind. But again, it's a blessing in disguise. You know what I mean? Sometimes you think something goes bad. It's exactly what you needed to push you along. So he said, yeah, I may have a situation for you. Call this guy, da, da, da. This guy was a developer. He was a real estate developer. He opened up this high rise right across from Frank's car wash.
Yeah.
He opened up this high rise. And as soon as you walk in, you have a concierge to the right and there's a glass wall to the left. Behind the glass wall was an entire gym facility. You walk in the door, huge, like 13 floors, I don't know, 17 floors, whatever it was, right? He said, I need energy. I'm having trouble closing because where they are in the economy.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble closing these places. I want people to walk in and see, oh, people are living here. Oh, there's good energy. I need you to help me get energy. Well, okay. What do you want to do? He said, well, I need a place to train my people. Train your people here. Well, how much do you want me to pay you a month? Like, I was prepared. He's like, nah, nothing, no fee. Just give me the visibility that we're crazy busy. And so I told the trainers I hired, I got a new place. That happened the same exact day I got fired. The same exact day. So there was no glitch, yeah. Right? There was no time
off. Universe aligned.
100%. I started training there, but then I opened up, I was opening up my own place down the street, blind the floor, looking at the equipment I wanted to buy, meeting with reps from Life Fitness and all these other places, Techno Gym, and like looking at a whole bunch of stuff and buying here. And I was just in a great position because of all the stuff that was coming in. And the day I was supposed to leave, Cindy. Yeah. Okay, that part.
So, let me just clarify. That was Dolvet's phone.
That was my phone.
That is not part of the Culturation podcast, even though it is Atlanta-based. Shout ATL, out. I just don't want to pay music licensing fines. And it was not approved.
I'll go figure. So anyway, yeah. So I did that, and I started building out my place. I built my place, and I, for the first time ever, had my very first gym.
What was the name of that gym?
Body Sculpt, baby.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
So, and I needed a publicist at the time, so I hired Justin Epstein and Mandy. I don't know if you know who those people are.
I've heard really good people. I've heard they're unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, so now you open your own studio. Mm-hmm. Kind of tell me a little bit about that studio.
Opening the studio was interesting because I'm laying out floor, and I remember the logo. And did you help me with that logo? Was that you?
I don't think so. No. That was before me.
That was before you. I forget how
that came
about.
The one that you have tattooed.
Yeah.
Before me.
Yeah. So got the logo on the floor, and I kept staring. And I remember going in one day with Bert and showing him what the progress I made. And he was like, dude, you see that floor? That's your floor. You see that? You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just that sense of pride. And I took other trainers in. One guy, he worked for Verizon. I took him in. And, you know, helped me get certified and taught those guys how I did my body sculptor training. And I started to build a team, man. And it was just so dope, man. I remember celebrities coming to train, like Janet Jackson in the studio, and trained Boris Kojo and his wife, Nicole Larry Parker. And I hired Sherry Riley because I saw something special in the place. I said, I need a manager, someone to help manage my career. I need a publisher, help someone who can help me put the stuff out there. But, you know, I was just in a position where I was determined to win. You know what I mean? It was like, well, you're just a gym owner. Why do you need a manager and a publicist? It was more than me. It was like, this thing feels like it can be big. It feels like, just don't sit back and, oh, I'm on a radio show. No, there's more to it than that. I started getting phone calls from auditioning for parts, and I did a Verizon commercial and a KFC commercial because I loved the whole acting aspect and television. It's the Leo in me. You know what I mean? I loved all that stuff. All that happened as my studio started opening up, and brick by brick by brick by brick.
So what made your gym special? Was there something that you offered? Were there certain classes? Was it the trainers? Was it the mentality? Kind of what was your vision for this studio?
Everything about my studio was about camaraderie. When I was in the previous place that I got fired from, it was every trainer for himself. And I said, if I ever open up a place, I don't want that. I want trainers to feel not only welcome, but their voice mattered. I gave them the business. I cut the percentages based on if I gave them the business or they gave the business. But it was more like, if you came in as a client, I would do all the consultations, but then I'd sit down with my team and I'd present you, the potential client, to my staff. This is what he's looking to do. These are the gains. These are the remains. These are everything. Like, what would you do to train him? And I kind of opened, I likened myself to House. You ever see that television show House?
Dr.
House? Yeah. And so we bring out the whiteboard and kind of the medicity thing. Let's figure out this puzzle. So I don't know. I remember having Come to Jesus talks with my staff. Guys, there's nothing you can't do. There's nothing. And I remember showing them how to push themselves. And I gave them my story, and I showed them different ways, and I invited their voice in. So it was always a, not just a safe place, but a thinking place, you know? And I think that's what separated. And the energy came out into the room. The classes I did, pure energy, 60 stations in a room, DJ, the whole thing. That was bananas because it was high intense energy. So you went there knowing you get a good workout from various trainers of various backgrounds, but also do classes that amplified the energy, the movement and the motivation too. So we were onto something. We were onto something super, super, super special.
Well, you must have been onto something, because from this, opportunities really started to open up. And one of those was Biggest Loser.
Yep.
So kind of how did that all come about? What was your, one day you're just sitting there, and the next thing you're running a gym in Atlanta, and then you're on one of the biggest shows in television history with viewership. It's got to be insane. How did that all happen?
To be honest with you, I've never said this to you before, but the main reason that it happened was because of you and Mandy. I got on that show because of you. You did such a good job from a PR perspective and putting me in the right places that it made LA visible to me.
I did not pay him for this.
He did not pay. That was not an endorsement.
Real talk, like 100% truth. So,
yeah.
Wow.
You just did. You did such a good job. It was like when out in LA and the producers are searching for trainers, they saw me and the Jezebels, the AJCs, and other platforms that you said, try this, do this, do this. I was visible. Because of my visibility, they called.
But I appreciate the shout out for me and Mandy.
Right.
But when they called, you were ready.
Yes.
Like you always say, if you stay ready.
You ain't got to get ready. Fact. And I was ready. I've been ready all my life. You know what I'm saying? And I've been preparing this from I was a kid, since 4 years old. You follow me? And so that part of it, yes, I was ready. Doing the TV stuff, doing the training, it was the perfect marriage. I was doing two things that I loved at the same time. On this gig, went out there, auditioned. It was me and two other trainers in a room. And I just remember when I first got to LA, I'm at the Sheraton Hotel across from NBC. And I got there, and I'm like, I got this job, it's on and popping. I thought it was just me. It was 25 other trainers there, male and female, walking all around the place. It was the funniest thing ever. And long story short, it was down to three male trainers because they already found their female trainer. And one other guy got it and not me. So I came back home to Atlanta and I was like, so what happened? You got the... Nah, I didn't get it. They chose another dude.
Wow. I don't think most people probably knew that.
Yeah. Which was a blessing in disguise from an internals perspective, because the show was coming to an end in a lot of ways. You know, their main staple trainer, Jillian Michaels, was leaving. There was some lawsuits going on, production team versus production team, and it was just a chaotic environment. The two trainers they hired, which would have been me, they hid their faces for 2 weeks. Who are the new trainers versus Bob and Jillian? By the third week, America was like, I don't know. You know what I mean? It was kind of, it got flat. That would have been me, my scenario. When I came on board, I was standing next to, when I finally got the job, I was standing next to Anna Kournikova and Bob Harper. So it was a different position.
That's right.
There was no darkness there. It was like me and those two people. Bob having built his career on the show, and Anna Kournikova being a tennis star. So it was a unique scenario for me that I was very fortunate to be a part of.
You know, the thing is, we talked a little bit earlier about it, is that a lot of people would have looked at that getting denied on the first time or not making it and looking at the negative or saying it's a wrap. But in fact, sometimes what we view as negatives are positives in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would have changed your mindset, got depressed, or felt like it was a failure,
mm-hmm.
who knows if you would have been in that position for the second opportunity.
I wouldn't have been ready. Interestingly enough, I told you a quick story a while back about how in the same day I got fired from the gym, that same day I found someone who helped me reposition my career. Literally, 3 days after I got denied the job, Scooter called me and said, you know, because I was training his girlfriend at the time, Justin Bieber, Scooter Braun being Justin's manager. Justin Bieber's on tour. He's like, dude, we need help. Maybe we get a trainer on the next leg of the tour or something. Not you. You're too expensive. Give me one of your trainers. I was like, no. It's so funny you call, because I was just about to accept a job that I got turned down from NBC to do The Biggest Loser. So I was going to leave my place anyway for 6 months. Like I kind of set myself up to kind of work remotely, if you will. I was like, all right, cool. So you can do it. They said, let's work out some numbers. Worked out some numbers, and I went on tour with Justin for a few months.
How was that experience?
It was terrible. And not terrible from a Justin's perspective, but terrible because I wasn't in my own element. I'm accustomed to clients coming to me. and being in control. I was touring on tour bus, and I never did. So it was dope from that perspective. I got to see that side of the world. I got to see a young superstar, how he handled pressure, how he didn't handle pressure, how his team operated. I watched Scooter very intently, like just his mind, just the way he handles situations that are that could be potentially stressful. He knew exactly what to do with it. But he was affected by people around him as well. But I have a lot of respect for that guy, a lot of respect for him. And I learned a lot. And I think it's almost like God was saying, you got this job with Biggest Loser, NBC, television, the whole thing. Your path is set. But there's a few things you need to learn before you get to be the best for this job. There's still some, there's a couple pages you haven't read yet. Let me present this book or this chapter to you. Read this and then you'll be ready for the job. Because I did that job and got fired from that one. Not even, no one knows that. Like Scooter was like, this isn't working out. Justin's not really working out. You know what I mean? There's certain people here that you're not getting along with, not getting along with you. This in the camp. Sorry, bro, you got to go. So I left. I kind of left like this. Hey, you know, I was kind of, I was excited, but a little disappointed too. But I knew what I was going back to. I was going back to my own thing. But I learned so much. And I kind of took some of those things I learned and applied it into the NBC scenario. It was a blessing in disguise.
So you end up getting the gig with NBC eventually, mm-hmm. getting on Biggest Loser. Mm-hmm. When you got the gig, what was the first thing you thought to yourself? Like, where did your head go? Like, do you remember, like, the first thing when they said, we're picking you? What was your first thought?
I was sitting outside my apartment at the time, about to go do hot yoga or something, waiting for them to call me, because they had already told me no a few months back, waiting for them to call me and determine that I got it or didn't get it. I got the call. Todd Lubin, he was the EP at the time, called me and said, you're the newest trainer on NBC's The Biggest Loser. I remember punching the ceiling of my car, like not punch, but like celebration, like pumping my fist almost at the top. And I said, are you being serious right now? You're joking me. He said, no, I've never been more serious in my life. Welcome, right? And Mark Brown was with me. I'll never forget. That was Friday the 13th. I was like, this can't be a bad karma day. This is an awesome day. Well, 3 was there and 3 is my number. So that was dope. I'll never forget getting that call. And I was shocked and happy and excited and ready all at the same time. I remember hugging Mark. I remember Mark taking a picture. I'll never forget that day for the rest of my life. It was awesome.
And this is like, now the third point in life where you've had the life-changing moment.
Mm-hmm. I've had a few of them. I'm ready for the next one now.
Okay. So speaking of the next one, let's kind of go into this. So you're still in LA.
Yep.
Still doing your thing.
Yep.
I know you got a million ventures, things you're working on left and right. What's next for Dolvec Quinns?
Well, like this, I think the next thing for me is to continue God's work and continue to have a voice and continue to inspire. Continue to motivate. And so I'm choosing different platforms to do that, whether it's the resorts around the country, both in the States and different islands, what have you, and just take small sections of individuals or bigger sections of individuals who want to find their power in paradise, you know what I mean? And get back to being centered to, you know, sometimes we need those little vitamins in life to get us back. I'm gonna continue to do that. I'll do a podcast. I'm working on, and I've invested in a few products that will hit shelves soon, whether it's Lean Joe Bean coffee, protein gummy bears. I've written a second book because my first book was amazing, 8 weeks, the New York Times bestseller.
For those that didn't read the book or may not be familiar with it, you want to just kind of give them a little insight to what that book was about, if they haven't read it or purchased it?
If you haven't read or purchased the book, I titled the book The 3-1-2-1 Diet, Eat and Cheat Your Way to Success. And 3-1-2-1, those numbers represent the days of the week. Eat clean for 3 days, cheat on one, go back to eating clean for 2 more days, and then cheat on the one. 31-21, 3-1-2-1. And essentially, it goes back to body sculpture days. I had clients who would come and work out with me, but then they go out and have drinks. It was like, I got to find a way to still be a person who can give results, give them a little bit of what they want, but still commit to the clean. So it says, it's basically like, it's balance. Lean towards eating clean. Lean towards eating clean. Give me 5 days of clean, but 2 days in between of where you get to splurge and indulge and have life, because everyone needs balance. And, you know, I talked about it on Dr. Oz and Rachel Ray and all these other platforms. Scientifically, it works. It's just body manipulation from an internal perspective. That way you're not deprived or you're not exerting on either way.
I mean, it must work if you're an 8 times Let's over New York Let's bestseller. Go. I mean, come
Let's
on.
Let's go, baby.
So book number 2 is being worked on right now?
Book number 2 is being worked on right now. But I'm also working on a show concept that we're talking to a couple of major networks about at the moment. I'll do the show concept first, just from a marketing strategic perspective.
Give you a platform and then put the book on. There 100%. You go. So, look, man, you dropped a lot of jewels today.
Thank you,
man. I think people are going to like start writing home, go in their notebook, put some of the stuff down. But I think more than anything, people are going to be inspired. And that's what you do naturally. If there's one thing you really want people to take away from today, because you gave people so many insights and different ways to process things and to go about it and your challenges and your successes. But if you wanted them to walk away and say, I'm going to leave listening to this and this is going to stick with me, what would that be?
That's a good question. I would have to say, approach everything with love first. Because the minute that you approach it with anger, pain, or fear, it's already destroyed. Go back to approaching, if you're trying to start a business, approach it with love. Someone will say to you, be passionate. That's too round. The arrow that I want you to shoot is love. Put love into it. Put love into your relationship. Put love into your work. Put love into your family. Put love into your friends. But you won't be able to do that unless you put love into yourself. Put love.
So listen, this is why I got to get cameras installed in here. So we're going to start videoing these podcasts. I'm going to set up a whole camera.
I think you should.
Because people need to understand, when he says this, the smile he has from ear to ear about how truly he believes it and the love that he has coming would be, you need to see it to believe it.
Yeah, man.
So for those that want to get in touch with you, want to follow you on social media, this is our shout out time.
Bet.
You know, so let people know, how can they follow you, see what's going on?
Everything I have and everything that's on every social media is just at my first name, at Dalvet. So Instagram, at Dalvet. Twitter, the same. My Snapchat, except for my Snap. My Snapchat is Indeed Q, because I always say Indeed. I don't know why. But Indeed Q, Q being Quince for my last name. So follow me on that. Coming soon, DalvetTV.com.
Listen, you know you're a big deal when you can get an Instagram handle or a social media handle with just your first name, Prince Sting Dalvet.
Let's go.
All right, man. Appreciate you coming on today. Much
appreciate
love.
You, brother.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Once again, I'm your host, Justin Epstein, and thank you for listening to Culturation. As always, this show has...